Another year has come and gone. Are you wondering what the future holds? Are you struggling with the decision about love, money, your career, your family? StarPsychics.com, that stars with a Z, has the answers you desire. StarPsychics.com is the best and brightest advisor site on the internet, staffed by top-rated, professional, fully tested, and certified advisors. This is the real deal. At StarPsychics.com, you create your own personal account, and you pick your advisor by reading their extensive bios. Then you decide on a budget that you are comfortable with. Your pathway to a clearer and brighter future is just a few clicks away. No gimmicks, no bait and switch. StarPsychics.com has daily blogs and lots of links to help you develop your own intuition. Log on now. That's StarPsychics.com. Remember, stars with a Z. And here's the best part. They're available 24/7. StarPsychics.com. Remember, stars with a Z. You must be 18 years or older. Your future awaits.
Hello, everybody. This is Natalie, also known as StarsCast, which most people know me with both names. I had another awesome guest today, actually a first-time guest in his field. I've never had anybody like this on my show before, so it's going to be really interesting. But first, I want to talk to you a little bit about Mystic Living today. The new issue is up today, as a matter of fact, and I'll still be putting stuff in. You know, a lot of people will email me the night before, oh, Natalie, I want to put this in. So, and I do it. I mean, I'll do it on the first. I'll put it in on the second. It doesn't matter because I do it all myself. So, you know, since I'm the boss, I can do it, right? But anyways, you can still submit articles, excerpts, poetry. Mostly, you know, good stuff. It doesn't have to be Mystic Living Today oriented. In other words, it doesn't have to all be spiritual. I mean, I've had articles about golf, basketball, you know, things like that. So long as it's in good taste and I need an image with it, and you need to send it to stars with a Z, C-A-S-T, at mysticlivingtoday.com. And then on to my other site, stars with a Z, another one, psychics.com. And then there's another one too, you know. That one is where I have all my psychics. I like to call them advisors because I think psychics got a bad rap with Miss Cleo and all that kind of nonsense out there. And that was the PRN network, and I think they're gone. But they didn't give us a good rap at all. I mean, we took hits. All of us took hits about it. But now it's different, so I'll call them my advisors. And I have a nice group, probably 35 or 36, not including myself, and with all different kinds of modalities, tarot card readers, channelers, mediums. Basically, I don't think I have anybody that does I Ching. I'm going to start doing charms. That's C-H-A-R-M-S, charms. I read charms, and I can do that with my cards at the same time. So eventually I'll start doing that, but I won't do one-on-one sessions unless you really want it. It'll be in an email kind of thing, and you get a picture and all that kind of good stuff. So that's coming. We still have our 10 minutes for $10 for brand-new clients. Now, this is first time only, one time only. If you try to do it a second time, well, I catch you somehow. No, I do catch you. I know. I can see what's going on. So just do it one time, and we have really good rates. And let's see. Oh, now we have my PayPal integration. It's the new way. PayPal has had it for a little bit, but we did not put it into the site. It takes time to do, but it's a method where, like, say you make a purchase and you don't want to pay all the money up front, you can make it in payments. But the good thing for Stars and Natalie is that we get all of our money up front. PayPal handles the payment situation. So it's a win-win for anybody, really, it is. And you get to make payments and all that kind of stuff. So anyways, okay, well, I'm going to bring in my guest, and I just, you know, mentioned to him that I've never had anybody on who does this in all the 12 years I've been doing the show. And, boy, I could have used him when I was in high school with my dance class, and we'll talk about that. He's probably laughing. Anyways, I want to bring in Drake Eastburn. He is a board-certified hypnotherapist, co-founder of Eastburn Hypnotherapy Center and the Eastburn Institute of Hypnosis. How are you today, Drake?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Awesome. Talking about my dance class, we practiced in the gym, right, this dance class in high school. And then we had to do a test on it, okay? I completely, I don't know what it was, but I completely forgot everything. I did it so well that the teacher said, boy, you really know this. That's all she had to say to me is, you really know this. And it did something to my brain, I think. I don't know. You can explain what happens with that. But anyways, I want to get to the start of how this all came about for you. How did you get into hypnotherapy?
Well, it's kind of a funny thing, but in the early 70s, I started doing the Silva method, which is a process of hypnosis. Jose Silva was a hypnotist. He did not like using the term hypnosis because he thought that there was a negative connotation, and he was using the term mind control, which was at least as equal.
You're right about that. I remember him. I remember him, yes.
So, but he did some great stuff, and I studied their programs. I did all the advanced classes they had to offer and like that. And there was a lot of stuff we did with psychic stuff and astral projection and healing of the physical body and even distance healings and all sorts of things like that. And at the time, I was a migraine sufferer, and I used hypnosis methods to get rid of my migraines, and I've never had any since, and I've helped a lot of people get rid of theirs. And the methods that I was using back then were kind of slow and boring, but nowadays I've got ways of getting rid of your migraine pretty fast, so it makes it a lot easier on everybody. But I did all the stuff that I could with the Silva method, and then I went on to, there were some classes here in Colorado at Denver Free University, and I got to be good friends with the instructor of that class and one of the other students. And we actually went into business together using hypnosis methods to create abundance. And we did do that. And eventually I kept taking whatever trainings and stuff I could find, and I was accumulating these credentials. And then one day I decided, you know, I could make a living doing this, and I hung out my shingle and the way I went.
And the rest is history.
Pretty soon I was the biggest guy in town, and got involved in training schools, and eventually I met my wife in 99 in New Hampshire at a convention there, and then we eventually opened our own school, and we've been going great guns. Now, her whole thing is she works with fertility issues. She specializes in that, and she's very well known for her methods and teaches people all over the world, really, in what she does. And we have trained all over the world. We've trained people. We've been off to Europe several times, and Australia and the Caribbean and Canada and, of course, the United States. We've done a lot of trainings for people. So that's kind of our thing, and we're both authors, and I've just had three new books come out last month.
Well, I see one of them is called The Hypnotist Bible, A Reference and a
Right?
Journey. But I have a question before I forget. Why did you do the book in black?
Okay, because I wanted it to look like a Bible, and it's supposed
That's
to look
I
a
thought.
Little more.
Yep.
I said we either do it in black or dark blue or like that, and it's to have a more textured look to it than it does, but our publisher tends to not print covers as glossy as they might be or like that. So it you can kind of see the texture in it, but not as much as we'd intended. But it still looks pretty good, I think.
Oh, no, it looks really good. And I thought to myself, you know, the Bible is black. And I thought, well, it kind of makes sense. But I had a feeling that you had a part, but I knew you probably had another. My favorite color is deep blue, as my sights are. They've all got this blue, and I just love that color. Now, I want to ask you, too. Okay, you have worked with a lot of people, the USA Olympic cycling team. What's it like? I mean, what kind of problems would they have, for example? Like, they're afraid to go too fast, or I'm afraid to ride, or I'm afraid to compete, or what would you tell them? What kind of problems do they have? I mean, you ride a bike.
You know, sometimes that is the issue. You know, it's like they might have been in a bad accident at one time or another, and then they get a little hesitant. And,
yeah.
Well, you just can't be hesitant in that game. Sometimes it's about me just toning it down a little bit. I mean, when they go into a competition, yeah, we need to be our adrenaline levels up and stuff
high
like
stuff.
That.
It yeah, you got to be ready to go. Yes.
Yeah. But we can almost overdo it. You know, we can get so intense that we get in our own way. And, you know, when they're riding out there in the Peloton, you know, it's like if there's an opening and they're too wired up, they might miss it, an opportunity, because an opportunity might come up just real briefly. And then it's like if they miss that, you might not get another chance to break away or whatever. Or you might be overly excited and break away too soon, and then you get out in front and you lose gas and the pack
exactly
catches up
then you
to
get you tired. How I don't even know how they pace themselves. I mean to know when to really push, like, okay, I'm at this point, it's time to go, or you're going too fast. I mean, I don't even know how the brain works with that. But there's a lot of things that you can use. You know, smoking is one, hypnosis, anxiety. Like I was
mm-hmm.
talking about my dance class, I don't know what it's what she said to me probably. Oh, you're doing such a great job. Well, I had that in my head. You're doing such a great job. No, you're really not. I was probably arguing with myself. And this is no joke, Drake. And so I get there. Okay, time for me to perform my little routine. I messed
right.
it all up. I took dance tap classes when I was a little girl. I didn't really have trouble with that, but I was in a group. It was when I had to be alone that
uh-huh.
I had trouble. I could have used you then, I could tell you.
Yes.
But
there's
you
some
know,
sort of, yeah, there's some sort of performance anxiety or something going on there, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, my God, she's in front of all these people. Oh, my God, I'm petrified. But I'm sure most people listening or will be listening, they're thinking, oh, yeah, I had to do an oral book report. And, God, I hated that, standing in front of all these people, all these kids, rather. But you know what happened to me? I was fortunate. I read so well when I was in grade school that the teacher would give me these advanced books to read, because she'd call me up and she'd say, what did you just read? And I would tell her, and she said, this is not enough for you. I'm going to bring you a book. And she would bring me another book, a lot thicker, a lot harder. And the one time she said to me, now, I want you to read this. And I said, I got to tell everybody about this? She said, no, you come and tell me. I looked at her. I said, you're kidding. She said, no. She said, there are people that you recognize in class that are going to not do well in front of people. It was probably a mistake for me that she did that. And then there are people
yeah.
who like to just talk. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
boy,
probably
you know,
true,
that's,
right?
Oh, absolutely, it is true. Yeah. Yeah, you could do I had just the opposite thing happen. I had a teacher tell me that I was reading stuff that I shouldn't be, that I wasn't capable of. You know, maybe that's what made me more determined than ever that I was going to read these more difficult things. And,
yeah,
so
yeah. I mean, I knew I could read, and I was really good with interpretation, and she saw that in me. She saw that in me. I had the best teachers when I was in grade school. I don't know about you, but it actually formed something within me for what I'm doing. And believe me, I didn't start at this in the very beginning. I was in tennis. I did tennis, but you know what? Could have used you there too. I didn't know how to win. I looked
yep.
good. I played good. I worked for a club and the head pro, and he said to me, I'm watching you, and I can't figure out why you're not winning. And I looked at him, and I said, well, maybe it's not that important. And he
you know,
said, well,
that could be.
Do you think that's it? I don't know. We're analyzing Natalie today and all her little quirks. I couldn't win.
You know,
I mean, I'd win a game here and there,
the
but I had the ability. I had the speed and the knowledge, and I had him training me every week. And when I was with him, people would stop on the courts because I would pop, pop, pop that ball. But get me on a court with somebody else, I fell apart.
Yeah. It could be the same mechanism that was working against you with the dance thing. You know, it's like you may not, maybe you don't think you deserve to be a winner somewhere back in your subconscious.
Could
maybe
be.
Somebody gave a message somewhere back
yeah.
there that, you know, you're not supposed to be the best or the winner or whatever. You know, I had one of my cyclists who, other cyclists say he was probably one of the best there was. And in training, he was just amazing. And his competition and teammates all thought he was amazing. But in competition, he never did that well. You know, it's not, in the end, he did, but then...
But do you know why? I mean, is there a real reason that you can't win? And you know, if you're watching them, you say, well, what just happened here? This person should have won. This is wrong. This is totally wrong. Let's redo it. Let's replay this
yes.
because it's wrong. I mean, is there something that happens when you're really young and growing up that somebody says something to? I guess it's kind of like somebody saying, you're too fat.
Yep.
One person, what are you going to do? You're going to go on a diet and lose all this weight because in your head, I'm too fat, you know,
yep.
and then you're like anorexic.
So, yeah.
People don't realize, you realize, Greg, because this is what you do. People don't realize what you say to somebody could have a long-term effect on them. And, you know, be careful. You have to be careful with your words. Somebody did something to me. Probably, I don't know if it was my mother. It certainly wasn't my father. My father was the gentlest of souls. But, yeah. And my problem, and probably a lot of other people that are in my field, is we give too much for free. We do too much.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
yep.
me. I mean, you know, I look back at my, what's been going on with, you could call it my career, and my one side is kind of having a tough time. And I look back and I think to myself, well, Natalie, you did this and this and this and this for everybody and their brother and their mother. What did you get for it? Nothing. Nothing.
Yeah.
And my magazine,
yeah.
I do for nothing. Well, I'm launching a flip magazine. I'm going to be doing that, so I'll take ads and all that kind of stuff. But you see what I'm saying? Somewhere along
yeah.
the way, I learned this, that I didn't have to be paid for what I did to be great.
You know, something in the healing arts, that seems to be a very common thing. You know, I think
yeah.
a lot of it is a lot of us in this these areas are have the caretaker personality. You know, and it's and there's something about maybe we don't feel like we should get paid for that, and people tend to think that we shouldn't. I mean, we should do these things for free, but. You know, what we have to offer is more valuable than a lot, you know, than a Big Mac or something. You know, it's like we
no,
have a
true.
Lot to offer.
It's
and
true.
And we should feel like it's all right to get rewarded for these things. And, you know, I do things in my own practice that helps me to integrate that into my world. And then another thing I do is I don't even know how much I charge most of the time because I let – my office manager take care of all those things, so I don't even have to think about the
money. It's
probably
better for you. It's
yeah,
better for you, Drake, because you would end up giving away the star because of the
yep.
field. Because that's what happens when you are of service, which you are in essence.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, you get paid, but you still are
oh,
of
yeah.
service. You tend to overdo. You tend to give too much. I've done it all my life. All my life.
Yeah.
I can't escape it. I can't. And, you know, I'll think about, you know, Natalie, I've had my magazine now, which I'll probably ask Lindsay for something to put into it for the issue and our recording of our show. But all the time I've had this magazine, since 1999, I have done it for free. Nobody's ever paid
mm-hmm.
me to have an article put in or nothing.
Yeah.
It's really big, and I have beautiful people that submit. But you know what? I think about it. My son says to me, well, why don't you charge a little something? You know what it is, Drake? I'm afraid they won't want to do it anymore because it's been free all these years.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, that's something we have a mindset sometimes that we think, well, if we ask for money for it or we raise our prices or something, you
right.
know, we're going to drive away. But you know what I've found is every time that I raise my prices, this might seem stupid, but every time I raise my prices, I made more money. But there was always that underlying fear that
Right.
If I raise my prices, people are not going to come. But that's not true. It's not the case at all.
Well, you know, I have a lot of publicists, you know, and Lindsay being one of them. I have a lot of them that support the magazine. And, sometimes they'll put it somewhere on a site. It's rare that anybody will say, okay, you know, Natalie, you did this for me, so I'm going to put it on my site to let people know who you are and how wonderful it was and blah, 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 blah. But you know what, Drake, I don't ask for that either. See, I feel it should be common. It should be a reciprocation here, but they don't do it.
Right.
Now, I'm not asking you to do it, but I'm just using that as an example. I don't care one way or another. I've been doing this for all these years. It's not going to change what I'm doing, and it's not going to change me. But you do stop and wonder, well, what about me? I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not going to change. I am what I am, and that's it. That's the deal. Take me or leave me, you know. But, okay, now I do have some other questions. What are the myths surrounding hypnosis, these things that are far out of the ozone here that they don't make any sense?
There's a lot of them. One that I get a kick out of is that people think, well, if they allow me to hypnotize them, they're going to tell me all these secrets. And I'm just going, what's going on in the world with people? They have all these secrets that they're hiding from the world, and why do they think that just because I've hypnotized them that they're going to tell me everything, you know? And
that is a misconception, and it makes sense, so think about it, because they figure that you're going to go into their mind and you're going to dig out all of these little secrets that they've done maybe when they were 12 years old. Oh, I threw a rock at somebody, you know?
Yeah. What is it that people are doing? That's what I'm going, my God, you got more to worry about than me. You've got all these secrets.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you better do a quick scan and blank them all out, because I would be more worried if I was in surgery. Blurting out stuff.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes. Well, yeah, there would be that. But, you know, I'm going, well, for one thing, we're held in confidentiality, so if I did hear something, I can't repeat it. And
right.
You know, it's not like if you say something, I have to publish it on the evening news or something, because that isn't going to happen.
Oh, so and so is seeing so and so. Yeah, I love that. No, it's true. It's sacred. Being confidentiality is very sacred in my eyes. I've been told things.
Yeah.
Oh, don't tell anybody. Well, you know, you're not going to have it repeated by me, but stop and think. Why are you telling anybody anyhow?
Yes, exactly.
Keep it to yourself.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, if you want things to stay secret, keep your mouth closed.
Keep your mouth shut. Let me put tape on it.
Yes,
okay, another one is, can you explain to us how suggestion is the language of hypnosis?
Okay. Yeah, well, that's pretty good. And really, we are given our subconscious suggestions all the time, but we may not be talking to it in a way that it's receiving what we intend for it to receive.
Like
if somebody says, I don't want to be fat, what the subconscious is really hearing is, I want to be fat. Or if they say, I hate being overweight, the subconscious just goes, yeah, and you're going to hate it more. You know, it's like, I'm going to follow your instructions.
Yeah.
And you're
wait,
still
wait
gonna be
till
overly.
Next year comes around, you're going to gain 10 more pounds. No.
Yeah.
I am very disciplined. Yeah, I'm really small. I weigh 102. I'm 5'2". A small person. I'm very small. But that's one thing, the compliment I always got was I was disciplined. Even when I played tennis, and I have to go back to that, I mean, Jeff was his name. We're still good friends. If he could make me look really good or he could make me look really bad. I always told him that.
Mm-hmm.
He said, what are you talking about? He said, you're great on the court. You know, my idol was always Chris Evert. He said, you emulate her. You hit like her. Maybe you're not the size of her, and maybe you're not at that caliber. He said, because we both know you can't win anything. He would tell me that. He said, but you see, he said, you can do this. You do it. He said, look, everybody stops and watches you hit the ball. What do you think that means? They like to watch me because I have a nice body or something. I don't know. We were always laughing about it. But but it's true, Drake. You know, I think, and nobody really told me that I couldn't win. But, you know, you see, look at my idol, Chris Evert, okay? She won so much, and I followed her. Even the owner said, oh, your girl's on. You better stop working. And he paid me while I watched her in a tournament. Oh, yeah, because he knew I loved her. I mean, but I hit like her, see, because I imagined myself the same strokes. And, you know, Jeff would always say, I watch you play and I watch you play, and you should have got at that ball. Why didn't you do it? I said, I don't know. I was intimidated. That's part of it, too, Drake. Sometimes people get intimidated. Mm-hmm. They think that you're bigger than me. Oh, they weren't as fast as I was, because he always told me you can't teach people how to be fast. They either are or they aren't. And he said, what you can do is make them be faster. If they have that ability, he says, look around. He would talk to me, you know, in between a couple of matches that we would have, and he'd say, look at that over there. Do you think I can make her run fast? Hell no. She could never catch you. So, you know, but you see how those things happened? And I think growing up, I'm sure this affects many people, even they can look back and say, you never had people say, boy, you're really good at that. People just didn't do that. They didn't tell me that. I was good at anything. So how did I know?
Yeah. Yeah, so we do need that. We need that kind of feedback when we're young. And that builds what we call an hypnosis, forms our critical faculty. And the critical faculty could be, wow, I'm good looking, I'm a good athlete, I'm a good student, and like that. Or it could be, I'm not too swift and I'm never going to amount to anything. It just depends on the information that we get in early on. And if that information kind of gets all formed by the time we're 5 years old. After that, we're able to think more critically about things, about information that comes in. But before that, all that information gets accepted into the subconscious as truth, and it doesn't matter what that truth be. If the truth is I'm a good athlete, then that's how we're going to promote ourselves out there, how we're going to think of ourselves. You know, in my case, I was raised as the stupid kid of the family, and it took a long time, and I used
hypnosis
actually to get beyond that, you know, so that I could, that wasn't a hard one to live up to, because it was pretty easy to do poorly in school. And
sudden you're an A student, right?
Yeah. But, you know, I went out for wrestling, and this follows right along with what you're saying. I went out for wrestling when I was in junior high and high school. And I was an athletic kid. I was strong. And I knew I was losing matches that I didn't need to. I knew I could beat this person, but yet I wasn't. And I couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. And I had a friend, and he went out only 1 year. And he was like 6'7" or something. He was big, tall. He had arms and legs all over the place.
He was a powerhouse,
Yeah, he was not athletic at all. And every time he went on the mat, he won his match. And I'm not kidding, he would walk out on the mat, trip over his own feet, and fall on his face. And everybody'd laugh, and he'd get up and But then he'd still go out there, and he was in our heavyweight division. So, you know, when you're in the other categories, I mean, you're wrestling somebody that's probably within 5 or 10 pounds of your own weight, so it's pretty even match. But when you get into the heavyweight, the discrepancy could be huge. So he'd be coming up against these monsters, but he always won. And I thought, what is it? He's not that good. But the one thing that set him apart was his dad was always there on the sidelines, and his dad had one of these Super 8 cameras, and he was filming things and cheering his kid on. And I said, you know, that's what I'm missing. My parents don't give a damn what I'm doing, you know. They never asked.
You know, I'm listening to you, and I'm thinking back to when I was in grade school, and my parents both worked, and I was a very lonely child. That's what did it to me. I didn't have any guidance. I would go across the street to my friend's house, but that was her family, and they didn't owe me anything. I mean, they take me places, but they didn't really help to show me things that I could do. It was always about my girlfriend. You're making me really think about this. And to get out of that, you don't really, because that's the young years are the it forms everything in your head. I mean, you can say, well, I don't like hamburgers. Well, you didn't like hamburgers when you were 6 years old. So somebody told you that the hamburger was lousy, or you ate it wrong, or you did something, so therefore you're not going to eat a hamburger. I mean, it's all of these words, but I didn't even hear those words. I had a gal that I did topics with in the very start of my shows, and she passed away, and she always told me, she said, I don't know how you turned out the way you are. And I said, well, what do you mean? She said, you should be, pardon my French, a bitch. I said, why? She says, because listen to your background. Listen to what you didn't have and your girlfriend had across the street and the other one down the street. You were alone all the time. She said, I'm going to tell you something. And she was a medium. She said, you were not alone. You had angels with you. They were the ones that were helping you to grow and formulate your spirituality and be the way you are now. It wasn't your parents. She said to me, I even think that you were probably dumped on them, because she said, I told her the story about my life. But you know what, Drake? It was okay with me. If they passed my house and didn't want to come pick me, you know, call my name and we'd all go out and play like we were 6, 7 years old, I was fine. I turned around, I either read a book, turned the TV on, or I did a lot of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And it could have been meditation, and I really didn't even know. But I did a lot of thinking and absorbing, and it was like I really didn't care. I didn't sit and cry. Well, they didn't come and sit. My mother worked. Call her up and cry because they didn't come by and get me. It really didn't bother me. I was a strange child.
Yeah.
Think about it. You know, I didn't have that nurturing.
Yeah.
You know, and you can use this in work.
That's like me. Because it's like there was one day, I mean, when I was real little, I look around and I'm going, you know, if anybody's going to take care of me, it's going to be me, because these people aren't doing the job.
At least you have you to count on, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's what they say. You have to love yourself because you are what you have. And that's true.
Yeah.
But it's in this world, it's not really like that. I don't know. Sometimes I think the world went to hell in a handbag sometimes. People are, and you probably find this out now or finding it out, people are so opinionated than they were before. And I think it's because they were locked up and they couldn't go anywhere. And so they were thinking all of these things. Well, when I get out of here, I'm going to say this. And that's exactly what they're doing.
Yeah.
And I bet you didn't do it.
No.
No,
and
Drake wouldn't do that.
And those opinions that people are putting out there are kind of can be dangerous.
They are dangerous. Because it's unfounded words, unfounded things that they're mouthing off about that they really don't know, and they don't have the answer, but yet they feel they do.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of being quiet and absorbed, that's what I do. I mean, my friend told me, you should have been in politics. Oh, no, somebody would have shot me because I have a big mouth. I would have argued with him. You're wrong. I want you to prove it to me right now. Because so I knew my place. I knew that. I had a strange kid, wasn't I? Where did all this come from? I had this blooming personality that was working and working and working. All of a sudden, bam, there I am. But anyways, I have another question.
Mm-hmm.
What exactly is regression therapy?
Okay. So, and this kind of fits in well with what we were talking about, because when things happen early in life, and most of these things that formative do happen early on, through hypnosis, we can go back and we can reframe those things. And, you know, anxiety, abandonment issues, traumas, phobias, things like that often have a very early beginning in our life. And a lot of times a client will say, well, I know exactly when this started. This thing happened in junior high school, and that's when it happened, and I've been having PTSD or whatever since. And what we remember is almost never the thing that, that caused it. And but it's, it is a subsequent sensitizing event or symptom-producing event, and the actual thing is usually way back further. And when we get back there, we take the person back in time, and when we find the trigger, the original event, that usually creates an aha experience. And that in itself can be enough to shift the whole thing. But we also create a healthier scenario for the subconscious to operate of, and it's as if that other thing never happened at all. It is a product of cognitive dissonance. As Leon Festinger said, we go from a dissonant state to a consonant state. And so it's in hypnosis, this tendency is magnified many times over. And the jump to that consonant state, all of a sudden, it's like that other thing never happened. Now, we'll still have a memory of that typically, but it won't have the same charge around it that it did. And memories aren't necessarily very accurate anyway. And theory now is that we don't really remember an actual event as much as we recall the emotion and the story around that event, and that's what we're actually carrying with us through life.
It's true, so true. You know, and it applies to you and I. I mean, think back to things that happened to you. That, but you know, I often feel though, we when we're really young, we're being prepared for what's coming when we get older. I mean, I've had a lot of nasty things happen to me, but you know, I took care of my Alzheimer's husband, and if you think that was not easy, because he tried to kill me every day, Drake, and that's no joke.
Oh, God.
I kept him home, and you know, I've had authors, and they've asked me about it, and the thing of it is, for me, was it was like something that I felt I needed to do, and I did it well.
Mm-hmm.
And he overpowered me. I mean, he was huge, a lot bigger than me. Of course, most people are. But I survived, and I never got hurt, not once.
That's great.
But, you know, and for me not to have post-traumatic stress from it in itself, maybe I have some residual. I don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
How do you know if you have residual of something like that? Do you know?
Well, you might be hypervigilant or, for instance, you might have an exaggerated startle response. You know, like if somebody walks up behind you, if you jump easily.
Oh,
that's
yes, and I jump. Right.
Yeah,
no, I don't
well,
have that.
Well, that's a major sign of PTSD, yeah.
Okay, well, I don't have that. I mean, somebody's asked me, his best friend said, I've been thinking about you, because he was in the Marines, and he said it's like being, you know, you're blasted all the time, almost like being hit with a gun all the time. All the time somebody's shooting at you, all the time. And I said it's kind of like it was, I went through all of that, and I walked out of it unscathed, and maybe there's some effects mentally, I don't really know. But it hasn't really changed me at all. I mean, I put it into my, all the things that I've done. You know, you want to know what I've done. And it's okay. I mean, I feel okay. I don't feel.
Right.
And it's kind of, he was the one that always told me I was very disciplined. Very disciplined, he said.
Yeah.
And, but he was a teacher and he was brilliant. And that's
right,
when it's
right.
Really sad. But anyways, let's get back on track here. Does hypnosis really work in weight loss?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you have to consider the subconscious works in patterns, and it likes to do the same thing over and over again. And if we created a pattern of going to the gym five times a week, then that's a pattern that's going to work in our favor. But if we've created a pattern of going to fast food twice a day, that's a pattern that's not going to work in our favor, but the subconscious doesn't care. It just likes to do the same thing over and over. And when we try to break these habits through conscious effort, it can be very difficult if you've tried to do that, because for the subconscious to repeat these patterns, it requires no volition. So it's easy for it to just keep going down that same route. But to do it through willpower, that creates stress or dissonance. And so the pattern is a consonant state. So the mind keeps wanting to go back to that state of consonance, which is going through the fast food window, which isn't helping us at all. And so to do that consciously takes effort and it's stress. And usually that wears out before we change the pattern. So in hypnosis, we can change those patterns a lot quicker, a lot easier. And a kind of an example I like to use is, you know, if every morning you get up and you step off the porch and you head out and you head down this path, and it's the same path you've headed down every morning when you got up. And this path, it could be the path of a smoker. It could be the path of poor eating habits. It could be the path of some other habits. But it's been the easy path, and you've done that over and over. But one morning you get up and you step out on the porch, and during the night there's been a huge snowstorm, and there's no sign of your usual path. But during the night, through the help of your local hypnotist, we dug a path off in this other direction. And now all of a sudden, this new path becomes the easy path or the path of least resistance. And so the mind starts going down that way, and we create a new path. And so that becomes the easy way to go. And that's why hypnosis makes these things so much easier, because we're getting right to the source of these habits. We're actually changing neural pathways and when we do this sort of thing, and we're creating whole new ways of responding, and we're getting beyond some of those the old training. You know, you were talking about somebody who was told they were fat, and then they end up being anorexic, you know, and it's like, you know, we're trying to, we got this old model, and sometimes parents are really I mean, I've had clients who, at early ages, their parents were putting on these very restrictive diets and things like that when it really wasn't necessary, you know. And it's like, and I know when I was wrestling, there it was a big thing to get your weight down so that you'd be, you know, a lower weight category. And so now you've drained all your energy by not getting proper nutrients in your body, and you're going to go out there and perform at the top. And I don't think that's good. Now, kids are growing, you know. It's like, you know, take care of yourself. We don't have to win at everything. And so, yeah, these patterns are the subconscious takes that path of least resistance, and it's kind of our job to kind of shift those around. And we can do it a lot quicker in hypnosis since we're working directly with the subconscious. And there are just things that we need to change. Like if we find ourselves addicted to something, or, you know, if, well, I got to have chocolate, or I got to have pastries or whatever it is. A lot of your diet programs, they tell you, well, come and get on our program and you can eat the food you love and you don't even have to exercise. Well, that's appealing to people because they don't want to change that path of least resistance because that's where the comfort is. But
it's going to take a lot of work, too.
Yeah, and the truth is, if we maintain, if we try to change, and we can while we're on these programs, but what we're telling ourselves is, I can keep doing these things and I'm going to lose weight. But when, as soon as you're not on their program, you're right back to where you were. And I always say, if you want to make a change, whatever it is you're doing, don't do that. Because that's what's wrong. It's what we do every day that's causing the problems. It's not some temporary diet that's going to fix it. Because everybody, they go on a diet, and yeah, they might lose the weight, but then they go right back to doing the things that got them there in the first place. So we have to make more than just temporary changes if we're going to be healthy individuals. You know, I don't know if you saw, but the Academy for I forget what the name of it is, but the AAP, who is for young people's health, and they just announced that they're releasing that kids as young as 12 should be put on these heavy-duty diet and medicines, and that at 13 they're recommending gastric bypass surgery and things for children. And I'm just going, no, we're just something else is wrong with us.
I see things like I see things too. And come on, use common sense here. Now, I love potato chips. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I do. I mean, I try different kinds of Wise and Better Made, but the best ones are New Era because they're from Detroit, and that's where I'm originally from. I'm a Motown girl. But anyways.
Okay.
So I limit myself. I don't eat them every day, no, and I could. I'll say to myself, okay, Natalie, you always like them with tuna fish sandwich, and you like these pickles. And you like Berner's ginger ale. Now, remember, this is all from Motown, Detroit. I was a Motown girl.
Mm-hmm.
I lived in Detroit all my life, and that's what I would eat. So now what I do is I reserve my taste for I have my chips with my sandwich. That's all I ever have them with.
Mm-hmm.
And they sit there. And I go in the pantry and look at them. Okay, hi, how are you? Nope, you're not good for me. Too much salt, not good. And it's got a lot of fat, not good. But, you know, for me, I was lucky, but I wasn't lucky. I got really sick when I was 35. I contracted some kind of a virus, nothing like what's going on now. But
mm-hmm.
It was probably much worse because there was no cure, no nothing that could help me. I couldn't stand. I couldn't do anything. I just laid and didn't watch TV. Doctor wanted to put me in the hospital. I said, no, I'm going to go home. I said, you know, I'm not a good patient. I'll end up walking out anyhow. Yeah, I know. You're going to be missing in action. And I said, exactly, I will. I'll do better at home. So, but you know what, Drake? I didn't pick up a book to read. I didn't watch TV. I didn't do anything. I was like that for several months. It attacked my liver terribly bad. And
mm-hmm.
My energy, I didn't even have any. I couldn't stand. Somebody would come to my door. I'd tell them, my mother-in-law would come to my door. Bless her heart. She'd start talking. I said, Vera, you need to shut up because I can't talk to you. That's what I would do
mm-hmm.
because I knew my boundaries. And I learned, I think that was part of the discipline in me because, I mean, something like that is very traumatic when your life changes totally. At that age, 35, that's pretty young. And but I could not eat fats.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't digest the fats. So what happened was is I didn't eat meat. I didn't eat junk food. I didn't – because it had – anything that had fat in it would make me really sick. Talk
mm-hmm.
about – probably a godsend. I didn't even know. But I am not a vegetarian. I'm not true. I love fish and I like chicken, but I'm most susceptible. I really like, I shouldn't say susceptible, but I'm geared towards fish like salmon. If it's broiled,
mm-hmm.
oh my gosh, be still my heart. I love it. So, but I don't have any meat or beef ever.
Yeah.
And I think it's because something happened to me then. Drake, psychologically, I couldn't
right.
eat it then because it made me sick, so I don't eat it now. I think to myself, can you imagine me having a hamburger, even though it was really, and they look good, they taste good, having one, my body would say, now what in the world did you just do to us? You consumed this hamburger that you have not had since you were 35. Hello?
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to react to this very well. We're not. We're just
yeah.
not going to. And so, you see, I think, can you make people be more, not can you make them, can they be more disciplined with hypnosis?
Sure. Oh, sure. It has a lot to do with the individual desire. You know, it's like people will come to me and they're drinking too much, you know, like they're having too many glasses of wine at night or whatever. And sometimes people are even afraid they're alcoholic, but mostly they're not. Mostly they have just created a pattern, and part of that has to do with our ability to build a resistance, or what I want to say, tolerance for certain things. Like, because initially you might come home after a hard day and feel a little wired, and you think, well, I'll have a glass of wine, and that does give us a little warm, fuzzy feeling, and we tend to chill out a bit.
Yes.
But as after a while, we do that for a while, and our tolerance begins to build, and now, well, one glass was okay, but two's even a little better, you know, because now to get that same warm, fuzzy feeling, it takes a little more to do it, you know? And then after a while, now we went from one glass of wine to a whole bottle every night to get that same feeling. And
yeah,
then
just
people,
give me the bottle. I don't need a glass.
Yeah,
well,
like,
I know you're shouldn't be laughing, but it's true. It's so true, yeah.
No, it's absolutely true. And so we've created a pattern like that. And so a lot of people, a lot of times they don't want to just completely never have a drink again, you know, but maybe just have a drink at that wedding reception or the New Year's celebration or whatever. And so we can do those kind of things too. And it is just, it's about building some discipline around those things. But it's not, but when we take a discipline, it's like, you know, this is hardcore willpower type of thing, but it doesn't have to be, because we can kind of shift the subconscious response so that we're not all the time desiring that glass of wine, you know, or whatever it might be. But we can do it in a more controlled way.
Moderate way,
and,
yes.
Yes, moderation, that's the word I'm looking for. Thank you.
But okay,
and
but tell me, okay, so somebody comes in and they have this, they feel they have this, you know, I'm just drinking way too much wine. I'm relying upon it to make me feel better at the end of my day. Okay. What,
mm-hmm.
How long does it take? How many sessions does it take? Do you know when they've had enough sessions, or do they just say, I'm good to go, I'm not? How does that work?
Yeah. Usually something like that is just a one session type of thing. That's pretty easy sort of thing to deal with. You smokers, it's a one session thing. They're in, they're out. You know, I just had a couple of people yesterday that they came because his sister had come to me, I don't know, a year or so ago, and, you know, and then so they came in. You know, it's like, and that's what happens. People, if people realize how easy it is to walk away from tobacco, they'd be flocking in. But most of them wait until they're having some crisis or something before they come in and do anything. But I think if people realize how easy it can be, because a lot of people have tried to stop on their own, and they go through all the withdrawal symptoms and everything, and usually that leads to a lack of success, and they keep falling back, and they're afraid that they're going to have to go through that again, which is not the case, because there's things we can do with subconscious mind to override those cravings and urges, so that when a person walks out the door, they just don't care about a cigarette anymore, which seems fantastic, and in a sense it is. But I see some hypnotists that go, oh, well, I want to work with cancer and those kind of issues. But, you know, if you help people stop smoking, you are working with cancer. You're helping them to avoid having to go in for a lung transplant and things like that.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, I never smoked. My parents did. And I love white wine or pink. I can't drink red wine because I have these allergic reactions to it. Well, my nose gets stuffy. It's probably what it's made from. But
that is when you get that stuffy sensation, that is the sulfates in the wine, and all wine has that to some extent, but some wines it's added in as a preservative. So if you're getting that stuffy sensation, you're reacting to the sulfates.
Ah, I must tell everybody this when they're saying, gee, my nose is stuffy. Oh, I know what it is. Drake told me what it is. Well, who is he? Oh,
yeah.
He's a hypnotist. Anyways, okay, so are there ever people that come in that you have not been able to help in the way you thought you could?
Okay. There are some that are going to be more challenging, and it just kind of depends. You know, some people, one session, and we're done. And sometimes some issues, it takes more work. I'm of the notion that there's nobody I can't help, but sometimes it might take more, and it just depends. Sometimes it's who the subject is. You know, some people are, you know, very analytical, and they want to stay into their analytical conscious mind. But you can do that and do hypnosis at the same time. It's like some people who have trouble sleeping is because they're hypervigilant, and they don't want to let go of their conscious awareness because they're afraid something's going to happen to them. Well, you can't stay hypervigilant and fall asleep at the same time. So you, at some point, you have to let go of that conscious protection and just trust that the world is going to work out. But everybody
can
be hypnotized.
That's what I have trouble. I'm listening to you, and I'm thinking, yeah, I wake up. I never sleep all the way through. I wake up. Of course, I have a big cat, and he likes to come on my pillow and lay right beside my face. So he does wake me up. And I wouldn't change that for the world. But, so that's probably what I'm going through, is hypervigilant, because I don't have trouble falling asleep. It's I wake up. And, you know, you go to your GP, your general practitioner, and I'll say, well, you need to do this. Don't eat 6 hours before you go to sleep. And I told my cardiologist this one time, I said, they don't realize they are GPs for a reason. General practitioners. They don't have specifics. He laughs at me every time. He says, why do you say that? I said, because it's true. You are a specialist. He is a general practitioner. He knows a little bit about everything, but he's not the expert. So if he tells me something, and he has told me, I'll say, well, I'll go see my cardiologist. Thank you very much for alerting me to that, because I don't believe him. Now, because I had mitral valve prolapse with regurgitation, and he says, well, I hear something. I said, yeah, you hear the clicking of the two valves. One of them's not closing. I know what you're hearing. And he laughs, and I said, I'll go see Dr. Lawton. That's my cardiologist, and he'll, you know, check it out and make sure. Every couple of years I have all the necessary tests, and I'm fine. I'm still breathing, and I'm still walking and talking and typing. But you got to remember, general practitioners are just general. And but I can see where, because you have a good knowledge base, you know, you have all the experience, I can see the success that you would have. It's all there. Because I've asked you some pretty good questions as a novice, as somebody that I don't know anything about it. And I'm not going to tell you that I do, because I don't. But I think you answered all those questions very well. You're really good. You know that?
Well, that's good. I appreciate you saying that. That's nice.
Yeah, you are. You're not all about self. Like, you know, sometimes when you can do things like you do, you walk around and think, well, I can fix that. You know that you can't sometimes. You know it's going to take a little bit more work. It's not,
you know,
and you're being really honest with.
Yes. I always tell my students, I'm not a healer. You're not a healer. That person sitting over there in the recliner, that's the healer. All you're doing is helping them to heal themselves. You know, and if you take it on yourself, you think I have to do it to them, then you're creating a whole lot of responsibility and pressure to put on yourself. You know, all I'm really doing is helping the individual to find their own way.
Well, it's true. I want to mention your website is HypnoDenver, HypnoDenver.com. I mean, we're talking about so many things, and I'm going to forget about the most important things, and your latest book. I'll just keep talking and talking. I can talk for hours. I don't know where that came from either, because I was a very quiet child, shy.
Uh-huh.
And look at me now.
Maybe you're
I can talk
up
to anybody. Huh?
Yeah. You're making up for it now.
Oh, I am.
There's some free stuff on that website. If people go on there, there's some free stuff. There's some stress reduction recordings.
Yes,
some
you have all kinds of things
stuff
on here. I mean, it's not about, and see, that's the thing. It's not about all the money, people. You know, I like to have people on that offer something. Sometimes they'll do, you know, downloads and things like that, but that it's very important to mention that. You have a lot of good things here, and your book, of course, the latest one that you have is The Hypnotist
Bible. Yeah.
A reference and a journey. Now, what is that kind of about? I mean, what's in it?
That book is, it's covering a whole lot of terminology that has to do with hypnosis. It's really a big glossary of information is what that is. And then Activate Your Muse came out about the same time, and that has to do if you're a writer or want to be a writer, or if you're experiencing writer's block or something, it's about tapping into your subconscious and your abilities to write or be a better writer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That would apply to me because I talk to all these writers all the time, and they're putting out all these books, and I have this fairy tale that I would love to put out. It's a beautiful love story, but I don't know if maybe that's one of my things that I feel that I wouldn't be good enough. I don't know. I would just tell the story is what I would do. And my granddaughter is at SCAD. You probably heard of SCAD. She's into art and doing so well, and I want her to do the illustrations. I mean, I have it all lined up. She can do the illustrations for me. She's so much like me, it's uncanny. But I guess I just have to sit down and do it. Or I have to get a session with Drake, and Drake's going to say, you will write this book. Now, put that in your head, Natalie. You will do this. What would you do with somebody like that if they came to you and said, I know what I want to write, for example. How do I do this? How do I make myself do it?
Yeah.
Good question.
Well, I say you don't make yourself. You create a desire so that you want to write this. There's some little tricks that makes it kind of easy and like that. I mean, I teach a class that Colorado Free University called Activate Your Muse. And this is just a one-night class, but it really has helped a lot of people to get going, to get motivated, and or to break that writer's block or whatever that they've been having.
Yes, I see it on your site. Now, these are the free downloads. Now, where are your classes here? Okay, let me go here. Services, certification, specialties. What if somebody wanted to do just a class on Activate Your Muse? Where do they go for that?
Okay.
I know you do it online. You do Skype. You do phone. You do FaceTime, Zoom, all that stuff. But where is it on your site in case somebody can listen and say, God, I would really love to know how to do this. How can I, you know, where do they go?
Okay, yeah. I have done this class on Zoom quite a few times. I've been doing it at Colorado Free University, and some of those are on Zoom, and you could get on that from anywhere, or some are in person. But we'll probably have that available on our website at some point, and they can just do it from there.
Well, that sounds like a good idea for me. So let's get with it, Drake.
Okay.
It was my first student. I knew Natalie would do this.
That's
well,
good. I
you
need
know.
Something else to do.
Yeah, she's got all these things that she does. Just add more one thing to her. And I'm going to be a dispatcher for my son. He's got a limo service. I said, you know, I'm being dragged in all these areas. Mom, what does your granddaughter always say to you? Oh, Graham can do anything. I can. Except I can't swim and I can't skate. Those are the only things that I have this thing that I could have helped. You could have helped me with swimming. See? And listen
there
to this, people. You have these phobias that you think you can't. I can't do this. No, I don't want to do this. Yeah, I almost drowned when I was a little kid. But so what? You should get beyond that. And that's where hypnotherapy comes in because you have to believe in the person that's talking to you, I think, too. Don't you, Drake?
It helps, having rapport is a big thing.
Yeah, because if you didn't sound, I mean, I would come to you in a heartbeat because there's an instant rapport with us. I mean, we're laughing, we're talking,
right.
You know what I'm saying? But if it was somebody else, I wouldn't bother because I would already go in thinking, well, you're not going to help me. I don't really even like you, you know? I mean, don't you have to like who you're dealing with? Right? You do.
Yeah. Yeah.
You do. I've had so much fun today talking to you. I really have. You're amazing.
Me too.
You know, and you'd think, and I didn't even graduate from high school, and look at all that you've done. I had a man who's an author. He has his PhD and everything, and he said, you know, Natalie, I'm going to tell you something. He said, what you have learned over the years, we could not teach you in college. We could not teach you the knowledge that
mm-hmm.
you have. He said, so don't let anybody, don't even tell anybody you didn't graduate from high school. I'm telling you anyway, he said. He said, because it doesn't matter. And I said, well, just think if I was in your class. He said, oh, you'd probably drive me nuts raising your hand. I have a question. I have a question. I said, yeah, I probably would now. But then school, I went to school too young. I mean, I think you should be in high school when you're a little older, because then I think you apply yourself better. I did not. It was like, they were like kids to me. They were like, and I was the same age. I don't know. It just wasn't good.
Well,
it has to do with, has to do with my background somewhere.
High school comes at a really poor time in our maturity, because right in high school we got all these hormones running every direction.
Raging, yes, exactly, exactly. Now, you know, my granddaughter is just turned 18, well, in June, and she had her first semester at SCAD. She was petrified. I don't know if I want to do this. And so I sat her down, and I said, okay, let's talk about it. What are you afraid of? I'm afraid I'm not going to be good enough. Well, I said, and why not? I asked her all these questions, and I said, you know, one day we were in a restaurant, and you were drawing a pair of eyes, you know, a person's eyes, on the tablecloth. It was paper. I said, do you think I could sit down and do that? No. I can draw a box within a box to make it look like a box. That's the only thing I know how to do. I cannot draw. Okay? So she said, and I said, and another thing, she says, well, maybe I'm not going to be good enough. I said, well, let's go back to when I was, and you can use this sometimes if you're talking to somebody. When I was in beauty school, I went to beauty school also. Oh, I did so many things. I didn't have a fear of going. There were a lot of talented young people there who were really good stylists, really good. I took two buses downtown Detroit by myself. I'm telling her all this, right? And her eyes opened up, and she says, were you afraid? I said, not at all. I was 16 years old when I went. I left my senior high school. I was a senior. I went right into beauty school. So I was really young, younger than you. And I told her this story. I went down there. I made friends. I said I was good in a lot of things. They invited me to go over to Wayne State University, show how I did hair. I was, oh, what did that do? And I didn't miss a beat, and I got a job. She looked at me, and she said, what do you think I should do? I said, well, I think you should try a semester. It's very expensive there, but I said, I think you should try one semester. If you don't like it, okay. I said, but you don't want to go down the road and look back and say, why didn't I do this? Why didn't I go? I said, you don't want to ever have that in your life. Why didn't I do it? Why didn't I try?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
It's true. And she's doing very well, all A's, and she made the dean's list. So what's that tell you? She thanked me one day at dinner. I have to thank you, Graham, and my dad, too. But I mostly have to thank you. And I said, why? She said, because I listened to you and I believed you. I said, well, I told you the truth. I wouldn't lie to you. But I also told her, and talking about when you're really young, I told her, I said, I'm going to make sure you have all the opportunities that I never had because my parents really didn't care about me.
Yeah.
I said, but your Graham cares about you. Your parents care about you, but not in the way I do. I tell her this when we're alone.
Yeah.
I said, I care in a different way. I just want to give you every chance. If you don't want to do it, okay. But I don't want you to look back and say, why didn't I do that? Right?
Right.
So
right.
I've enjoyed this so much. And again, I want to mention your site is hypnodenver.com. You're in Denver, Colorado. My godchild is in Aida. Is that what it's called?
Oh, Arvada?
Arvada. That's it. That's where she's living now. And another sweet girl in my life. And, I want everybody to get your book, A Reference, A Hypnotist Bible, A Reference and Journey. And we'll put this everywhere for you, all over my social medias that I have, lots of them. and make sure. And then I'm going to write to Lindsay because I want to put something in my magazine for the March issue because February is already up. And we'll put our little talk today, put a link to that, and your website will be there and all that kind of good stuff because you're a great man.
Okay. Well, thank you for saying that. You're doing a good job yourself there.
Well, you heard it, ladies and gentlemen, from Drakey's Burn. I'm doing a good job. I am. I have bad days, too, but I am. Thank you so much. You have an awesome day.
Thank you.
And stay the way you are, okay?
I'll do my best. Thank you.
You will. Okay, thank you. Okay, everybody, of course, this is the end of this show. Next week I have another one, and that one will be 1 to 2 p.m. again. But as always, we're going to play Free to Love by Gabby Ray. Kind of ends the whole thing, my show, on a high note, you know, a really high note. You're going to feel really good. You're going to feel like you want to dance. But before I go, I want to remind you, believe in things you cannot see. They really are there. And with that, we're going to play Free to Love by Gabby Ray. Thank you, Drake. You're awesome.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
If everyone could be who they were really meant to be, without limitations, discrimination, this world could show all its colors. So get the chip off the shoulder.
See you next week. Remember, believe in things you cannot see. They really are there. Bye-bye.